Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until he takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in for a new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. Now, for many fans, this episode may seem a bit awkward, and let me explain, BYU fans. We recorded an enlightening and fun conversation with former BYU basketball center Ali Khalifa. Now, we covered growing up in Egypt, his love of passing the basketball, what it was like to play during Ramadan, and why he eventually ended up at BYU. It was really a lot of fun having him in the studio. But later that very day, reports started to come out that head coach Mark Pope was leaving to take the job at Kentucky. Then Ali entered his name into the transfer portal. Obviously, we know he ended up in the Bluegrass State, but not with Coach Pope. He's now a member of the Louisville Cardinals basketball squad. He's not the first Egyptian basketball player, by the way, to play or coach at Louisville. And Ali will end up playing with a former teammate of his when the two played in Australia. So even though Ali has moved on from BYU, he's still a great guy and had a real blast talking to him. And it was a great interview. So we wanted to make sure that we still got it out to you. And for all those that remember his goodbye to BYU that he put out on social media, BYU certainly meant a lot to him. That's why we wanted to share this episode with you. So here is my conversation with Ali Khalifa. Ali, thanks for taking a few minutes. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you.
Always good to talk with you. And I want to start here. And I'm going to go a little different direction, because I know people ask you about your nickname all the time, the Egyptian magician. And I know you've been asked if you like it, and you've said you do like it, that this is something that you approve of. Okay, so my question to you then, to spin it a little bit a different way, have you been given a nickname throughout the course of your basketball life that you didn't like?
Not really. I feel like in Charlotte, they used to call me the Egyptian Nightmare. I didn't really hate it, but I didn't really like it. It was kind of in between. Shout out to these guys over there, obviously. But I feel like everybody been calling me here, been calling me the Egyptian Magician. And it's been just really cool.
What do you like about it? Is it just one of those ones? Because nicknames they're interesting, because when you find one that fits, like, it feels like it's like a glove. You know what I mean? So, like, is this just one that feels like it just fits?
Because all I do is pass the ball and shoot the ball. So I feel like it's kind of fits. Like you said, it's like a glove. Gives me confidence on the court when everybody calling me that. And obviously I appreciate the fan base and everybody who's calling me that. It's pretty cool.
I wanted to get into this a little bit later on, but since you brought up the fact that just how much you love to pass the basketball, I want to touch on it right now. I remember talking to you. You were a guest on BYU Sports Nation, and this was before the season started, and you kept talking about how much you love to pass the basketball, and it's all about the assist. That's what your game, it really kind of all starts from that point. And I remember thinking, well, that's awesome. And then when the season started, I'm like, oh, he wasn't kidding. He loves to pass the ball, and you were so good at it from, you know, top of the three-point line, kind of direct in traffic. Why do you enjoy setting up your teammates so much?
I just like my teammates to see them score and see them. Everybody loves to score, obviously, and I just want to be a good teammate and help them score, just make it easier for them. I just really like passing the ball, like you said. I said earlier, and I'm showing it on the court. I just like to get my teammates open, get them involved, everybody from the jump. I've been like that since I started playing basketball, and it's I'm glad I was like that.
So it's something that came natural to you. Was that a skill you had to learn, or since the desire was always there, the skill part of it sort of came along with it?
Yeah, I would think so. I feel like growing up, I was shooting the ball a bit more. Obviously, in Egypt, my team needed me to score more, but I already knew that I can see the court better. I can see cutters. I can see the three-point line. I'm taller than everybody, and not a lot of people can do that. And going to Australia as well has kind of helped me develop this, where I have a lot of great players around me and a lot of good scorers. I had to pick my poison, and I was just a good passer. And yeah, I feel like it translated to college as well. And Charlotte, they helped me a lot develop the skill, and here at BYU as well.
Well, I know that certainly that skill in particular gets noticed a lot, and it's drawn the comparisons to, Jokic with the Denver Nuggets, and that gets brought up a lot. Is that somebody that you like to pattern your games? Is that somebody you look up to as a big man that passes the ball and sort of leads the offense? What do you make of that type of comparison?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like since high school I've been watching a lot of Jokic, a lot of bigs who can pass, like old Sabonis and Jokic and Vlade Divac and all of them. But obviously Jokic started getting a lot better than these other guys, and I started watching his film. Obviously he's one of my idols, and I'm looking up to him. Obviously he's in a way different level, but yeah, I'm glad, or I'm very happy that this comparison, me and Jokic, obviously it's he's the MVP of the league. He's really good, but
it's a bad comparison.
So it's pretty cool just to see that. I don't really like comparisons that much because expectation gets way high up, and I'm happy that people see me as somebody as great as Jokic. So.
How big is the NBA in Egypt? How available are NBA games in your home country?
Growing up wasn't as much. I didn't really watch any NBA. I remember the first game I watched was Cavs versus Warriors 2015 or some 2016, something like that. I never really watched NBA. We used to play a lot of 2K, just how we knew the players and stuff. But right now, I think it got a lot better. A lot of the guys, there's a lot more access to watch the NBA, even though the games at like 3 or 4 a.m., the way to watch the highlights and watch the games and watch the players and stuff. But right now, basketball in Egypt got really better, and that's why they watch a lot of Western basketball, so it's pretty cool.
So what is the sport of choice in Egypt? Is it soccer? Okay, so that's what I was going to ask. I'm like, because I know most places it's football as opposed to soccer. But so was that ever your sport as well? Did you like that at some point and then kind of grew out of it, or how did that work?
Yeah, I still really like football. I say basketball and football are my favorite sports. But yeah, I was a goalkeeper for growing up. I used to play football and soccer and basketball. I used to be a goalkeeper. That's how I knew I have quick hands and not that quick of a feet, so I had to be a goalkeeper. but I had to choose between both of them because I was so scared to jump on my right side, not to break my right arm, so I can't play basketball. That's what I knew. I really like basketball more, and that's what I stopped playing. I wasn't really good on the field. I was just a good goalkeeper because I was big, bigger than everybody, and I had quick hands and long legs and long arms. So it was, I played football growing up.
So you were always taller than everybody else. Was there a point where you really hit a growth spurt and you realize, look, basketball's got to, with this height, it's got to go basketball,
yeah,
right?
I think at 12, I would say, because it was three of us, me and two of my other teammates growing up. When I was 11, 10, we used to be in the same height. Then they all stopped and I just started getting taller than everybody else. And national team coaches just started looking at me at this young age. Just when I started, it was like, wow, like basketball is going to be the sport I want to play. I was bigger than everybody else, so I knew like basketball is my sport.
So Sporting Alexandria is one of the bigger clubs in your country, right? And so given that you're from Alexandria, did that influence your love of sport growing up as well?
Yeah, so I started in a club called the Olympic Club. This is where my dad got me and my sister in the club just to play sports. Mm-hmm. My sister started playing basketball first. Then Sporting Club got her from the Olympic Club. Sporting Club is very, in a different level than the Olympic Club, obviously. But yeah, when I went there, the sports club was really big, and there was a lot of great players coming out of there playing different sports. So that's obviously contributed in me loving sports and just to want to do something. And obviously, I just got into basketball because of them, so.
You know, big picture, could you have ever imagined that this sport that you started when you were so young has taken you all over the world? Do you ever think back on just the type of opportunities that this sport has given you to this point?
Yeah, it's crazy. I never would have thought. I thought I was just staying in Egypt all my life. My goal was just to play in the first team and play in the Division I league in Egypt. But I don't know, just once I turned 13, 14, my mom started telling me to leave Egypt and go play somewhere else. So my mom started it all, and I wasn't very realistic with it. I was like, that's not going to happen. I'm not good enough. I don't think I'm good enough. And it happened. She was right, obviously, but she saw something in me, I guess, I didn't see. But yeah, like the world just, it's crazy just how basketball just took me all around the world. I can speak English now. And and I knew the U.S. as a country. I didn't know anything about the U.S. I didn't know anything about Australia or whatever countries I went to. So it was pretty cool.
You mentioned your sister a minute ago and how she actually started playing basketball first. And we'll get into a little bit more about what she did. She came over to the States and played at Cincinnati and some other places as well. But what type of influence did she have on you growing up from a sports perspective?
Huge. It's crazy. I don't think I would have made it out of Egypt without her. She, every day, she would just get on me, try to get me to work out, to go to the weight room. And she was a little taller than me, obviously, growing up, because she's older. But yeah, without her, I wouldn't be here. She made me love the game, I would say. I didn't really like basketball. So when I started, I was just taking it as a hobby. And she really made me love the game and think I have a future in this. So obviously, all credits for her and my family.
When you say she helped you love the game, what do you mean? And in what ways did she change your attitude towards it?
I feel like she would talk to me every day about basketball. We would just talk about basketball and watch some games and go watch like other ages play or the first team play. And she would grab me and go with her and her friends, obviously. And that was really cool of her. If I was by myself, I wouldn't really do this stuff or go work out every single day. And even if it's training outside, we had outdoor courts in Egypt. That's how where we practice. Even if it's training outside, she'd be like, let's just get spot up shots and don't run so you don't slip, whatever. Like, we did this growing up at 13, 12, 13, 14, whatever. And yeah, till now, I mean, she retired now, obviously, but till now she'd be texting me to go work out and to watch film and do stuff like that. So even till now, she makes me try to remember how I fell in love to the game and stuff like that. So it's
pretty cool. What's the age difference between you two?
It's two. It's almost 3 years.
Almost 3 years.
Yeah, she's January 1st, 1999, and I'm November. So it's like 2 years and 10 months.
Yeah. So let's stay with your family. What was your family life growing up? What was the family dynamic? We obviously know you had a sister. Do you have any other siblings? So what was your family life like growing up?
Yeah, it was just mom, dad, and my older sister. I was the youngest, so I was always the favorite. So it's pretty cool. Yeah, still the favorite, I would say. But
does your sister think that?
Or? Yeah, 100%.
Oh, so she knows you're the favorite.
She's been acting like it too, so she gets more stuff now. But yeah, we just grew up in a very poor area. And all my other family, like my mom's brothers, they were living around us too. So it was like the whole family just staying there. But we knew we have to make it out. My dad kind of worked so hard just to get a job. My dad never graduated college either, my mom. So my dad worked so hard every single job just to get us out of this little poor area to go to a better area. And obviously, thank God it worked. And he worked so hard to get us in that sports club. And we started just making our way up the ladder, just growing up poor and then just going to be in the middle class of Egypt. That's a big difference in Egypt. It's a huge difference, actually. But yeah, it was just growing up, doing nothing, going to school. Yeah, didn't really like school. Went to a terrible school growing up, obviously, for me and my sister. But yeah, it's pretty cool looking at it back at it now. I was just in the moment back in the day. Didn't really feel the struggle. Till now, I'd be like, wow, like I've been through that. A lot of people would have been through that. So it's pretty cool.
How do you think that has shaped you?
I feel like it made me stronger whenever there's hard situations that I know that, like, it's the storm can't last forever type of thing. So it's, and another thing that I got my family and my sister around me. So behind my back, pushing me through. And always thinking that nothing is going to be worse than what I had to go through. So that was pretty cool as well. And obviously, when I become a dad to try, I'm going to make a better life for my kids. Obviously, I learned that from my dad as well. So it's pretty cool to look back at it and know that I've been through all of that. And yeah, this shaped me. So
how often do you still talk with your mom and dad? Because they're back in Egypt, right? Yeah, so is your sister back in Egypt now as well? Or you're the only one in the United States then? So how often do you guys communicate? Is it an everyday thing?
Every day I text them. We text every day or FaceTime. I FaceTime my sister now back home. She can work the FaceTime stuff.
Help out mom and dad with some of the technology stuff.
Exactly. But my mom FaceTimed me yesterday. I was so surprised. Because my sister and dad were asleep and she FaceTimed me, so I was very surprised she knew how to. But yeah, they're back home in Egypt right now. I'm the only one who's here.
What do they, you're speaking of your parents, what do they make of your life and what it has become?
I feel like I just do this or do everything because of them, basically. They make everything in my life. I obviously wouldn't make it that far without their struggles. I feel like they put their life away just for us to be good, for me and my sister. So to be successful in life, and man, just it's crazy what they've been through, and they're everything to me. So I do whatever I do right now just for them, to make them live better back in Egypt and make their life easier for the rest of the way. So, yeah.
So at what point in your basketball career did you start getting noticed in terms of nationally and some of these opportunities that obviously ultimately presented themselves? When did those doors start to open for you?
I would say when I was 13, 14, I got called up to, it was a Serbian coach in the national team, but I was like 4 years younger. This is when I started like getting looks. And my guardian, his name is Ahmed Awadallah. He helps a lot of Egyptians go play in the U.S. because he's a graduate from Louisville. He'd been here before, so he knows a lot of coaches, a lot of connections. And this is when he started calling me. I didn't think I was good enough for him to call me, and he texted me, and he was like, you wanna go play in the United States? I was like, yes. And this one, really, I started getting looks. Then he gave me the Australia option. He goes, do you want to be a little different? Do you want to go to these tryouts? And it's called something called the NBA Global Academy. And I was like, sure, let's go. And I played terrible. It was my worst basketball ever. I didn't think I would get a scholarship. I was really sad. Then the week after, we had the African Championship. Just a fun fact, I think I played FUS in that tournament.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I played really good that tournament, and we had a camp called Basketball Without Borders in Africa. Mm-hmm. It was in South Africa. That's when I played really good. They started getting more looks. Then Australia offered me, the Global Academy offered me a scholarship. That's when I was like, yeah, I thought I made it already. I was like, yeah, I'm good.
It's just another level.
Yeah, and then when I went there, I was like, oh, still a long time. Like, I still have a long time to make it. Then first year, second year, I think I started getting looks from colleges. Mm-hmm. It's really cool. Actually, the first year, I started getting looks from, I think Charlotte was the first school that contacted me, and St. Mary's, I believe, something like that. And, just started getting looks and playing better and getting more looks. And my academic wasn't great in high school, so I had, the looks started getting shorter. So and Charlotte came in hand because they were willing to stick with me, even though I'm a redshirt. I'm grateful for them for that, obviously. But, yeah.
Well, we're going to pick up the conversation after this quick break, and we're going to go back to when you were with Australia with the NBA Global Academy. We'll pick up the conversation with Ali when we return. This is Deep Blue on BYU Radio. Welcome back to Deep Blue. I'm Jason Shepherd. Let's get back to my conversation with Ali Khalifa. This interview, again, was recorded before Ali decided to transfer to Louisville. Ali, before the break, we were talking about you being in Australia. You were part of the NBA Global Academy. And prior to that, you had never left Egypt. Is that right? So what was that experience like? Because anytime anybody goes away from home for the first time, that's a big deal, and everyone's going to handle that differently. How did you handle that part of it?
It was hard. Like you said, obviously it's very hard leaving home at 15. I think I just turned 16. So it was, my family supported it so much. Like, they were so strong, not trying to cry before I was leaving and stuff like that, because I was breaking, obviously. Once I got there, I feel like I had a goal in my head. Just first thing is to learn English. Yeah. And I feel like I kept myself busy. I know it was really hard, obviously, but I was just trying to keep myself so busy every day so I don't feel the pain that I'm away from home. And
keep your mind busy. Yeah.
Keep my mind busy, basically. And the basketball there, Australia, they play really tough and really physical. It was so new for me. And I'm glad I met some great guys there. And two of them are actually here right now visiting me, Efe and Ashe. They stuck with me a lot. He taught me English, I would say. Like, he is the big reason why I learned English. He's a great friend, and Efe as well. But yeah, they made it way easier for me just going there. There's a lot of internationals too. Just hanging out with them, picking up the English, watching. We used to watch a show, How I Met Your Mother, every day.
Is that how you learned English?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, just putting the English subtitles and try to match the words with the what's what he's saying, and yeah. If I didn't understand anything, I would ask Ashe, and Ashe would tell me what that means. And Yeah, they support me a lot, like the Australia, the Global Academy, Coach Marty and Robbie and all the coaches and the players as well. Even the Australian players, they helped me a lot. But obviously, like you said, it was always hard. And but like I said, I just keep myself busy, go to school, try to do anything because I couldn't speak English. And just go shoot every day by myself, just try to be on the court and try not to miss my family as much. And kind of worked out. I would say my second year was harder. When I went home for a month and came back, I kind of got a lot homesick and I was by myself a lot and started getting in my own head and stuff like that. So I started hanging out myself a lot. And then Ashi graduated, so I was by myself more.
Going through a lot of changes then.
A lot of changes. And I started playing a little worse because I was just thinking about a lot of stuff and overthinking and stuff like that. But yeah, you go through it and like once you go off that, like once you hit a wall and then you go over it, you feel much better. So it's good reflecting back now. It helped me a lot nowadays too. Whenever I hit a wall, I know what I've been through in Australia and what I've been through growing up. So it's pretty cool.
On the TV version of the Deep Blue that you did, your dad offered some advice telling you don't forget to pray. I want to go back to some of the things that you were mentioning in terms of just those inner struggles and being away from home and going through all those changes. Did you take your dad's advice? Did you keep praying? And how much did that help you get through those times?
Yeah, I always keep praying. And yeah, once it gets harder, obviously, that's when you start praying more, in my opinion. And yeah, just take my dad's advice every time I hit a wall, or even if I don't, even if I'm doing really good or doing really bad, I just keep praying, stay consistent with it. And this is what he taught us growing up, me and my sister. And it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool just to see how much better I got at it, too. Because when you move outside your country, outside your faith, because Egypt is a very Muslim country, mm-hmm. you get isolated, I feel like. And to be able to put the world away and everybody away just to pray for your religion, it's pretty cool. It takes a lot of guts to do it. And I can't tell you the amount of times I was praying in Australia and Asha walked on me, don't know what's going on. And it was pretty funny. But yeah, it's pretty cool just to see that I stuck to my faith, even all these distractions trying to keep me away from my faith. So it's pretty cool.
I remember you telling me when we talked on BYU Sports Nation that one of the things that you loved about BYU is you felt comfortable being able to practice your faith here. And that was one of the things that really helped you in choosing BYU.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely BYU, they go by the church rules. I feel like that's what every school should do in the United States. It feel like it's everybody just on the same page and everything. And if I'm praying, I don't care if I'm Jewish, Muslim, or Christian, LDS, whatever, you can just do it comfortably without anybody judging you. And it's a pretty cool experience that I had here. I didn't really have it in Charlotte, I would say. I didn't really have it anywhere else I went. But here, because everybody is very religious, feel like whenever I do my faith, they expect me to do my faith. Even they always expect me just, Ollie, you're going to pray today and stuff like that. So even Coach asked me this stuff. And it's pretty cool that even Coach Pope sometimes read the Quran and asking me about verses in the Quran and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool that both religions kind of very similar. And yeah, everybody expected, like the honor code is basically Islam. Yeah, so it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
You mentioned a few minutes ago that when you were, and it was, you had a chance to play for Egypt, and it was the U16 and the U17 teams. Is that when you faced Foose as well? It was during those games?
Yeah, so I faced him in the U16 African Championship. It was in Mauritius, I think. It's a small country in Africa. Yeah, and then I played the U17 in the World Cup. And 2 years ago, I played with the national team in the qualifiers, but I got injured the first game. So,
how often does that get brought up? By the way, and when you came to BYU, did you remember Foose from that? Or was it once you got here, wait a minute, you're the guy. Like, did you know that coming in?
It was on the visit. When I looked at him in the face, I was like, Foose, did you play though? He's like, yeah. Because Foose was so skinny back then. And he was playing like the three, shooting threes and stuff. And I was like, I saw him here. I was like, that you, Foose? He was like, yeah. I was like, oh, wow, that's crazy. And, but yeah.
But you got the upper hand in the matchup, right? Or did he?
They won, but I had more points.
So does that get brought up occasionally between you two?
He fouled out, actually. When we went to Italy, we roomed together for 2 nights, and we watched the whole game. And he fouled out. It wasn't even his fouls, I would say. But refs was just calling fouls on him. I played the whole game. I remember that. I played 40 minutes. And it was pretty cool. I was obviously really sad. I never lost the African Championship before. Yeah. I really wanted to. But we qualified to the World Cup, so it was pretty cool.
What did it mean to you to represent Egypt?
A lot, man. It's
there's something about representing your home country and having your flag and everybody from your country behind you. There's just – I've obviously never experienced that, but I can imagine – talk about some of the best experiences of your life. I can't think of one that's better than that.
Yeah, I feel like it was always a dream of mine. It's still a dream of mine because 2 years ago I was called to the national team, like the men's national team, and that was a dream of mine because all the players were there. I used to look up to them growing up. And, for example, there's a player called Asim Meray. He plays in South Korea, and he's like 30, 31, something like that. And he's one of the first Egyptians to leave to play in the U.S., playing basketball. So I always – he was my hero growing up. And he was my roommate 2 years ago. So that was like – that was crazy. Like, when I was talking to him, I was like, you know, I used to watch you when I was like 10, 11. Like, that's now we're rooming together, guarding each other.
He's probably like, you're making me feel old.
Yeah, that's what he said. I mean, he's old, but he's my guy, though. And it's a dream. And hopefully this summer, I don't think I'm going back, to be honest, but because I want to recover from my knee injury. But hopefully we're going to qualify to the Olympics, and hopefully I get a chance even just to go to a camp or something. It'll be really cool.
You said that Charlotte was one of the first teams that actually reached out to you, and you realized, hey, there is an opportunity to play in the United States at the college game. Was it because they were one of the first to reach out that ultimately you went there? What was the reason that you decided to go to Charlotte? Why was that the choice?
Yeah, that was one of the reasons, obviously. Another reason was my connection with Coach Sanchez and Coach Fern. Coach Fern is the head coach right now in Charlotte. Coach Fern is Australian as well, so he came watch me a lot, and me and him are really close even till now. That's my guy. And that was the first reason, second reason, and obviously because I needed a waiver and I needed to redshirt for the first year on Charlotte. Coach Sanchez, they trusted me, they're invested in me basically, and it paid off, I would say. I'm really thankful for both of them, for all the coaching staff. I don't want to forget names and all the players I play with there. But, yeah, I would say Charlotte was like one of my homes, I would say. Like, I really like Charlotte. Obviously, I met my girlfriend there, and I made some long-lived friendships there. Family, my friend's family, Jackson Threkin's family, is like my family. Used to call me their stepson, I would say. They're like, we were all so close, and I'm glad that I went to Charlotte.
So how different was it? Because you leave Egypt and you go to Australia, and that's going to have its differences. And then I'm sure you had an idea of what the United States was going to be like. Like, how did all the different changes manifest themselves? Like, what was the U.S. experience based on what you maybe had thought it was going to be?
Yeah, I came during COVID. So I didn't think I was like, there's no way I'm getting my visa done or my flights. And I got injured in my knee like a week before the visa appointment too. But once I got to Charlotte, it was just empty because of COVID. So I didn't really have any expectations of what's going on.
Yeah.
But I'll say here life is just way faster than Australia. I would say everybody's more rude, I'd say. Everybody's just thinking about themselves more than others. I'll say that's the big difference in the U.S. and Australia. But you just get used to it.
Yeah.
You're like, you go there and you hang out with your friends for a long time, and you just make your people, make your circle, and the transition from Australia to Charlotte wasn't that big because Australia is already like, it's like the U.S. a little bit. They speak English. It's a Western country, like all this stuff. And Charlotte was just a little different, but not as different, I'd say. And once everything opened up, it was just a little shock. Well, the food was a little different, and food is terrible here in the U.S. too. So
really?
that was another thing. There's not a lot of healthy options and stuff like that.
Okay, so as much as you enjoyed your time at Charlotte, eventually you decided that you were going to transfer. What went into that decision? Why was switching schools the right decision for you?
I feel like I was getting comfortable in Charlotte, I would say. And I feel like sometimes to make it to the next level, you got to get a little uncomfortable. And I wanted to test myself at a higher level. That was my goal, just after the season finished, we won the CBI with Charlotte. And I knew we were going to the American Conference too in Charlotte, but I felt like I wanted to test myself at a higher level and show my skill, because I was playing really good in Charlotte and not a lot of people were talking and not a lot of people were getting, I was not getting any looks for the next level. And I come here to BYU and I play half as good, I would say, and I'm getting all the looks. So that's like, that's a big difference. I wanted to be known to make it to the next level and to play hard, to work harder, to play in a better team and to win, obviously. That doesn't mean that I didn't win in Charlotte. I feel like winning in the Big 12 is different than winning in Conference USA. So it was a hard decision. It was like the hardest decision of my life. Like my meeting with the coaches after the season, I like cried, and it was like an hour meeting, and it was really hard just to be able to leave. And I didn't expect myself I'll ever leave Charlotte. And I feel like it was more of a business decision for myself for the future. I felt a little selfish, even though all the players transferring nowadays. And it was really hard, but I'm glad I did it.
What sold you? Because as you mentioned, you didn't know a whole lot about collegiate basketball. You didn't know anything about BYU. So how did they get you here?
I didn't know anything about BYU. And obviously, like any player that transferred here would say, that the whole world told them not to come to BYU because of the LDS church. Everybody's like, you going to Utah? You sure? You going to Utah? I was like, yeah, like it's just another place. It's okay. And yeah, my visit here was great. I feel like going to the visit, I didn't think I would come to BYU. I just wanted to see how it is. And coming here, I was like, wow, like this place feels like home. Then I had another visit somewhere else, and I decided like this is, feels right. Fus was here too. Like, I didn't really know him, but I knew there's two African Muslims here, so it can't be that bad, Fus and Atiki. And yeah, I decided what's best for me, I would say, just playing-wise. It's obviously a hard, it's always a hard decision to just leave somewhere when I was playing 30 minutes and be like, go to another place expecting the same. So it was hard, very thoughtful decision. And obviously watching the offense, and a lot of people doubted that, oh, we play so fast, how is it going to work? And I'm glad that we proved people wrong. And yeah, it's a lot of stuff, the Big 12 and the fan base, I'd say. Efe, my friend, he's here right now, he played at Washington State. And 2 years ago, they played here against BYU in the NIT.
Yep, I remember.
And he told me they were camping outside waiting. I remember calling him. I was like, you play BYU, right? He was like, yeah, like their fan base is crazy. I never had, that's the biggest student section I ever had in my life. It's so cool just to see like 18, 19,000 every single game just watching you, cheering for you. I never had this experience. Like, it was like, wow. My first game, I was so nervous. I remember that, like a lot of people. And obviously, start becoming one of the fan favorites too. So it's pretty cool just to be able to fit in, and people really like you and stuff like that. So
I want to go back to what you had just mentioned in terms of when people found out that you were considering BYU or that you were going to BYU. There, oh, you don't want to go there. There are a lot of preconceived notions that we're all aware of what people from the outside looking in think that BYU and Provo are. Now that you have been here and experienced BYU and not only have been able to enjoy it but to thrive here, do you feel any sense of responsibility to help change that narrative from people that may have some of those same thoughts looking at BYU that don't really know?
Yeah, I feel like whenever somebody asked me, or I think there's an article came out, I can't remember when, but I talked about it a little bit too. I feel like somebody asked me, or if there's a visit, for example, or a recruit, we're trying to recruit, they always made me talk to him because I just got here, obviously. But it's, you can't have fun anywhere. Like, people think just coming to BYU, you're not going to have fun, you're not going to have friends, you're not going to have anybody, everybody's married and like stuff like that. But like my best friend on the team, he's the married one. Like Trevinel is like, me and him are really close, and he's married. So it's not... If you're looking for the right purpose and you want to play basketball and play at a high level and do your studies without a lot of distractions, there's obviously distractions everywhere, but I feel like BYU have the least distraction out of every school I've been to. And you can really focus on your future. And we have a lot of people just wants you to be good. Even the professors here, even people, even the fan base, just want you to feel loved and like cared about. So... yeah, sometimes I just talk to my friends, even my friends in Charlotte, because most of them told me not to come here. My best friends, they told me, like, it's going to be hard. And obviously there's a lot of narratives just about Utah. Sure. I did not know. I didn't know anything about Utah. In Charlotte, I'm just far away. And I didn't really care. I'm like, I lived in like three countries. It can be like, what is bad? I don't understand. And I'm from Egypt. We're a religious country. So yeah. Like we go by the mosque. Like we do the same stuff you guys do here. You guys just do it in a smaller area because the whole U.S. just want to do their own thing. So it's pretty cool. It's not that different. It's just you're living life. You're just going to – what else do we do in college? Right? We just go to practice and go to school and just hang out with your friends. That you can do that here. You can do that in Florida, for example. Like it's I don't know why people just keep saying this stuff. I feel like if you're looking for the other stuff, I feel like you're just not focused on basketball. I feel like you just don't want to get better. So, yeah. So.
Let's focus about on the court stuff. This year was such a pleasant surprise to everybody. Everybody enjoyed it. Everybody that watched BYU basketball this season could see how much fun you guys were having and the success that you guys were having. What an unbelievable year. How was it for you? And I know you're the whole year you're dealing with injuries and you're dealing with illness the whole year. How would you describe this season for you?
Roller coaster, I would say. That's the word. It's been crazy because I didn't practice during the summer, so I didn't know if I'm going to play. And that's when every transfer go through this. When you start doubting yourself, you're like, I should have just stayed at the level I was in. And first couple games, didn't really play a lot, didn't play well. My knee started hurting. I sit out for 2 weeks. Then Foos gets injured and Atika gets suspended. And they're like, okay, Ali, like, let's play NC State, a Final Four team. Let's play for 30 minutes. And then since then, I feel like the season started for me, it was low, and then it got high up because I started playing and then I started starting every game. And my knee started hurting a little bit. I started getting injections during December. I got one injection, I remember, before Christmas. Then we could come back. I started getting sick and started going down again. Then go up again, and I feel like I was very happy that we have the P squad, the psychology squad, mm-hmm. with us, because it kept me just mentally stable throughout this year, because it was just a crazy year for me, just getting injured all the time, and my knee's hurting, I needed a surgery, and obviously I was getting sick a lot too. It was the change of weather, obviously, or my knee stuff as well, and taking injections in my knee just to get the season through, and just been crazy, and like you said, that's what it takes, I guess. And
are you able to separate the way the season ended and losing the final game to Duquesne? Are you able to separate that from the season as a whole? Because I hear people say, "Oh, this what a bad season because the way it ended." No. The ending was not what everybody wanted. But when you look at the season, I don't know how anybody can say anything other than what an unbelievable season. Are you able to separate the two?
Yes, I feel like. Obviously, I wish we ended it better, obviously, and for me personally, I wish I played better this last game just to help my team, but you can't deny that we had one of the best seasons in BYU history, and if you're not thinking that, you're not a real BYU fan, you're just a hater, in my opinion, and even these people cheering for us, even from our fans, they were doubting us at the start of the year. And they were saying, we're going to do bad, we're going to finish last, we're not going to win any games in the Big 12, and now they're cheering for us. So some of these fans are just, I don't mess with, to be honest. And I understand if you can be disappointed at the end of the year because we lost to Duquesne, which is a great team, by the way. But you can't deny that we had one of the best seasons, and like I said, in BYU history. And that's what the real people, the real fans see, that, okay, it's a disappointing ending, but in the first year in the Big 12, we do what we did and beat Kansas, and do all this stuff that we did here in the Marist Center as well, and the non-conference schedule as well. It's unbelievable. I didn't even expect that coming here as soon as I committed here. But going through the summer with our guys, and it was motivating for us that people were doubting us. And I said it. I remember first time I got interviewed, people picked you 13th. They asked me in down, they picked you 13th in the Big 12. And I was like, good. Like, that's what we wanted, like, people doubting us, and we ended up finished fifth, and we should have finished higher. It just didn't work out, but like I said, if you're a real fan, you'll see that we did all of that, but if you're just doubting us just to doubt us, you're not really a BYU fan.
I want to ask you one more thing before we wrap things up. And towards the end of the season, once we got towards, you know, conference play or conference tournament play, and then obviously in the NCAA tournament, one of the big storylines was what you were going through with fasting during Ramadan. Were you surprised that that got as much attention as it did? Because that was something that got a lot of attention here in the state of Utah and around locally, but then it got picked up nationally. Was that something that took you by surprise?
Yeah, a little bit. I feel like a lot of players are doing it too, and they're getting, obviously, Diarra from NC State, for example, he was doing it, and he was getting, obviously, more attention because they won more. But, yeah, I was a little surprised. I didn't think it was that big of a deal, or that's how I felt like it. I was just trying to focus on myself because we had this early games, and people were saying early games are better. I don't think it's better, in my opinion. I feel like I have to, because I wake up at 6, I want to sleep again, but we have to leave at 8:30 to go walk through and stuff. So it's, for me, I need to sleep more to be able to play better, I would say. So it was so hard to adjust, plus the 3 games I played in Ramadan with all at 11:30 a.m. So I was just trying to focus on myself. But after that, after the fact, when I checked social media and stuff, it was pretty cool seeing a lot of people. That's all I've been asked about in the open locker rooms and stuff. How was Ramadan? They didn't even ask me how I am or anything. So it was pretty cool just to be able to practice my faith and people know about it. So.
Well, and you had the support of fans. You had the support of players and coaches. And what did that part of it mean to you, that not only were they – you know, helping you along your own personal journey, but in a lot of times people were doing it themselves and trying to show support that way.
Yeah, it's pretty cool just seeing the fans. And for example, like Rob Ramos is our athletic trainer. He was doing it with me, so till we lost, and then he started eating. But it was really cool seeing that support from him and from Wiz and from Nate Austin and the Coach Pope, just to be able to provide me what I need. And our nutrition as well, Lisa, everybody just tried to help me to be in the best state I can be to play games and to feel loved. And even after we lost, Nate was contacting me, do you need food? Do you need me to order you something? Do you need this? Do you need that? So it was pretty cool that even after the fact that the season finished, they still supported me and they asked me questions and they asked me what I need and stuff like that. So I'm really grateful for our coaching staff and our fan base.
Well, I know I speak for all BYU fans when I say watching you play this year was an absolute thrill. Ali, thank you so much for doing this. This was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I certainly did. Thanks for taking a few minutes.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. That was really fun.
All right, my name is Jason Shepard. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio. Last week, we told you we'd be releasing episodes every other week, but since we decided to release the episode with Ali Khalifa this week, we won't have a new episode next week. So we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.